Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Well, it is always time to take a look at the national picture and what's going on. And, of course, as President Trump travels the international stage and meets with G20 and all those folks, but our eye is always on that investigation going on, the investigation of Special Counsel Robert Mueller. What might he find? If it's out of the news, are they still working? What's going on? Well, I wanted to take a look at the potential of what might be happening and what might happen in the future with somebody who really understands the Department of Justice kind of inside and out, because she was a former prosecutor, both in the criminal and civil division for the Department of Justice for many years, also trained many of the people who came through the Department of Justice as she kind of took over so much of the training realm, teaching people leadership skills in the Department of Justice, and now spends a good amount of her time, as she's retired from the Department of Justice, training managers for law firms and making sure lawyers understand their skills. So the perfect person to talk to is Nikki Calvano. Hey, Nikki, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here, Paul.
And you've been on the Politics Tonight TV show. You came on there when things were kind of hot, so we get kind of a quiet moment now. But that's okay. As things seem to be quiet, at least as you and I are talking, what do we expect is going on, if not behind the scenes, but what's going on a daily basis, do you think, in the Office of Special Counsel with regard to DOJ and with regard to the investigation of, of what? Of Russia connections with the Trump administration, of obstruction of justice? Do we have any idea what they're probably doing?
Well, I can tell you this, that while it's quiet perhaps in the press, it is far from quiet in the hallways and in the offices of those who are coming together as a team. Right now, they're putting in some long days, and I'm certain that they've already begun to put in some very, very late nights. It may not be the sexiest work that they're doing on the front end, but from my perspective, looking at what I surmise that they're doing, they're probably going back and taking an examining look at what's been done thus far, what's been done on the Hill. I know that there have been meetings that's been reported in the press, and they're undoubtedly looking at what's been produced so far. Document review, as you can imagine, is intense right now.
Sure.
Being able to pull together documents, deciding what subpoenas should be issued, what may be issued, triaging, really, and digging through boxes.
That's always fun, going through boxes. You know, and of course, we're always hearing, and listen, it is the case, as you say, it may be quiet in the media, but when the media does pick up on it, we hear things like, will the president fire Robert Mueller? And of course, the president sometimes says he's an honorable guy, but hey, it looks like he and James Comey, pretty close friends, which doesn't appear to be true anyway. And you and I both lived through those Nixon days when, of course, the special prosecutor, Archibald Cox, was fired. That led to pandemonium. In fact, led to another special prosecutor named Leon Jaworski, which in his work led to the downfall of President Nixon. My question is, what is your sense of the relationship now? The laws have changed since the Nixon days in terms of the president trying to deal with Mueller. I'm sure you'd advise him just to stop tweeting, keep out of it. But what can we expect, you think?
It's hard to have any expectation, any reasonable expectation, because behavior is not necessarily based on a reasonable activity or a reasonable expectation. So far be it from me to guess at what might be done. I can say this. It would be careless, in my view, to do anything but let the special prosecutor proceed, pulling the team together, looking at what's been done so far, looking at the scope. I think that's a really interesting question here, Paul. And you referenced it. What's the scope of the investigation, and how far off the directive from the deputy attorney general are they going to go? What's the parameter there?
Right.
And will they follow the money? I mean, it's pretty clear to me that tactic or that strategy will be pursued and should be pursued because of who he's pulling together on the team. Special prosecutors bringing in people with extensive fraud and international money laundering experience.
A lot of people, and you were a prosecutor for many years, Nikki, and a lot of people believe when the prosecutors set their sights on you, it's a done deal. You're in for trouble. In this kind of scenario, do you expect that would Robert Mueller or any of his agents, people working with him, is there a sense of going, we do think there's something here and we're going to find it? Or are they truly, as a prosecutor, did you go through cases with a completely open mind saying, let's just see what we see?
Well, of course, that's everyone's intent, you know, and you and I often talk about the difference between intent and impact. You begin by pursuing certain avenues and also keeping an open mind as to where other avenues may lead you. From what's already been revealed and where the investigation's already gone, I mean, I think by now they probably have some clear channels and clear ideas of where they want to go. Can that change? Absolutely. And it wouldn't surprise me if it either intensifies or if certain avenues fizzle out. I know in my own experience doing some white-collar fraud and white-collar criminal activity, we embarked upon certain theories and strategies that we knew would likely lead us to further investigation. But we didn't have the end game in sight at the start. We never really began at the end.
And the way these things work, when the, you know, we'll sometimes pick up the newspaper and read about just a huge indictment situation of all sorts of people tied to something, all getting indicted. In this situation where Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law, getting his own lawyers, and Michael Flynn, you know, having his lawyered up, all this kind of thing, is it the kind of thing where one day, we don't know what's going to happen, but the government could announce, you know what, we are proceeding with an indictment against Flynn, for example, or is it kind of a, does it all kind of blow up at one time? All of a sudden, we wake up one day, and here's a report from Robert Mueller saying, guess what, all these folks are in trouble, or none of them.
Well, that's such a judgment call, and we really don't know how that'll play out. I suspect that you can do it both ways. You can either it can be like a trickle, or you can get the fire hose. I'm suspecting, because of the magnitude of what could ultimately be the magnitude here, that they will make sure they have every duck in the line, that they have the ducks in the row, that they have the binders with very, very clear documentary evidence. If they're beginning the interviewing stage right now, then they have indeed already culled the documents, and they have enough to sit down and use those documents intelligently for purposes of interviewing, which then leads to that next strategic call, which is to what extent, who, and on what charges.
How long? I think some people think that with this underway, you know, in a couple of weeks we're going to get a report. I mean, this thing can take years, right?
Oh, it sure can. And of course, that becomes then the real challenge, because we're looking at 2018. We're looking at the mid-years, and then it could conceivably go into the early presidential campaign of 2020. And we already have fundraising for 2020. The tough position they're going to be in there is because the political complexion has changed so much. Historically, special prosecutors did their work continuously and throughout different political cycles. But here, they're going to be under a magnifying glass, especially with respect to coming out of with Clinton's emails and with Comey's comments about Clinton's emails.
Well, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah,
I mean, when Comey came out and said what he did, and listen, I think whatever people think of Comey, and some liked what he did, some didn't, but I don't have any doubt that and I personally think he may have made some bad judgment calls, but I don't have any doubt that he was motivated by good intentions. He was trying to do what he thought was right. It just maybe wasn't right. But I don't think this was about, you know, impacting the election. I don't think that was his intent. My question is, if you're Robert Mueller, does that go through your mind? Because, you know, you're mentioning 2020, and you're right, but there's 2018, and that one's around the corner. So if you're Robert Mueller, are you thinking about, how do I do this when we get into primary season and we've got a potential of a House and a Senate turning over? And, you know, those are the kind of pressures that that James Comey was feeling.
And those are very real pressures that we can expect to see. I will say this. It would not surprise me to see this particular special prosecutor move as quickly as possible, given the enormity of his assignment. He is one to be known to be a hard-working and a hard manager. So he's driving his people to proceed as quickly as they can, to be as thorough as they can. So I don't think that we're going to see any procrastinating because we're in a more highlighted political forum. He won't step aside from that, and he won't wait. On the other hand, the pressures are going to be just overwhelming. I can't imagine the pressures to the entire team, because regardless of what's said, how it's said, the information from the investigation is going to impact the midyears.
What do you say to people, whenever I'm asked about, you know, the sort of the political motivations of even DOJ agents or U.S. attorneys or whatever, some are political appointees, whatever, but when it comes to doing the work we're talking about here, my sense, and you were a prosecutor for many years, politics just doesn't have anything to do, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, if you were investigating this president, that just isn't relevant. Is that a fair statement?
I think it's absolutely fair. I mean, based on my experience and based on my familiarity with work that I didn't do. Even at the highest levels, when we were working with training U.S. attorneys coming in, they were repeatedly told, you leave the D and the R at the door. You don't bring that in with you. Now, when it comes to policies and priorities and initiatives, then, of course, they're part of a political administration. But when it comes to actually doing the right thing, doing justice, it isn't even politics with a small p for the line prosecutors and the investigators who are doing the work.
But in something like this, when you...
I feel comfortable, Paul, putting my head in the pillow at night, knowing that these are hardworking government lawyers who represent, and then they feel as though they represent the people, not the administration. And I hope that continues. I hope I can say that.
And that is encouraging, and it does. It sounds good to hear you say that. So I'm imagining if somebody's listening to the podcast and says, but wait a minute, I'm not a Jeff, they might say, they're not a Jeff Sessions fan. And isn't he guiding this? Isn't he trying to make sure proper investigation isn't conducted by getting in the way? Because that is a political position, right? The attorney general.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that we can rely comfortably on the credentials of this particular special prosecutor, and he's leading the team. I think based on what we know about him and his career and his experience, and that he would leave the position or be forced to leave the position before he would compromise it. I believe that in my heart of hearts. And the team will take their marching orders from him.
Is it also a no-win for Mueller? I was thinking about this. If he ultimately right. We get a report from him, right? And if the report says, I've looked at everything, and I mean, it's just, again, if you're not a Trump supporter, you see so much here that, you know, it rises to the level of treason for people who aren't Trump supporters. And if Mueller comes out and says, no, there's nothing here, nothing indictable here, then you have that political war on your hand. On the other hand, if he comes out and says, yes, I think we do have serious obstruction of justice matters here, and whatever else he says, then, of course, Trump supporters and the powers of Congress who are running the House and the Senate, they're just going to call it the political witch hunt that the president calls it.
Yeah, so it's either going to be the whitewash or the witch hunt.
Yeah, right.
That's why I think it's important to keep the investigators and the prosecutors in the world of the law. They're looking at what elements they would need to be able to prove in order to bring a charge. And if they keep themselves within the confines of the legal standard, they'll be just fine. And he will be able to rise above that because he's not operating in that kind of a political arena. He's operating as a lawyer's here. He's a lawyer's lawyer. So that would be the only frame of reference that I could do the job if I were called upon to do it. If I were asked to be a part of that team, support that team in any way, it would have to be a real pure substantive legal mindset. Otherwise, you're doomed. You're doomed and you're damned.
You know what I hear, it's a great way to wrap the interview, because what you're saying is, for the folks listening, have faith. Have faith that regardless of the political players involved in all of this, when it comes to the Department of Justice or the Special Counsel's Office doing what it needs to do, all of that is media talk, all of that is political babble. They're going to do the right thing to the best of their ability, and they're going to try and get to the right result to the best of their ability, politics aside, or to use your words, the D and the R left outside the door.
That's what I'd like to continue to believe.
Then it sounds like when the report comes out, we'll have to talk again.
That's right. I look forward to that.
and see how you feel about that. Nikki Calvano, the master trainer of lawyers around the country, former prosecutor, civil and criminal divisions for Department of Justice. And you lived in Chicago for quite a while, so you know cases right here at home. Our home, anyway,
right.
Was your home. Thanks for joining me. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you for having me, Paul.
All right.
Have
care.
A good day.
Who let the dogs out?
Well, whenever you ask the question, who let the dogs out, the best person to go to is an expert on dogs and cats and animals of every kind. And what a pleasure, because I've been doing this podcast for quite a while, and this may be the first. We've done radio interviews together, but this might be the premier performance here on the podcast from one of my oldest friends, and he is the oldest friend I have. He's very old. And but he's
not he's, as old as you, my friend.
Here we go. But of course, you all know him as the pet expert of WGN Radio and of the world, as far as that goes. Truly an international figure. I know that because you look at his Facebook page, and every day he's in some other country giving some speech and being honored with some award, which he's well deserving. I'm not going to say nice things about you, Mr. Dale. And of course, such an activist in making sure that our pets and animals of all kind are treated well. So what? And he's an author, and we can just go on and on. We'll work things in as we go, but I want to get to the topic, so let's start by welcoming one of my dear friends, Steve Dale. Hey, Steve.
Love that introduction. Thank you very much. I should take you on a CTA bus with me so you could say the same every time I go on the bus.
I would, but you won't catch me on a bus.
I know.
However, I'll take you in a limo with me, and we'll go down Michigan Avenue, and we'll see where we go. See, this is why we don't spend time together. Anyway, hey, you know, Steve, a lot of I want to talk to you about, but here's the trigger for it.
Yeah.
It's summertime, and people will be hearing this podcast, of course, and you do your own podcast. I should say that. Not only you're – oh, my God, how did I not say that? Now you're on every Sunday morning, 6:35 on WGN Radio with one of the best radio shows there are, always on pet behavior and pet issues. But you also have your own podcast for WGN. So folks who are listening to me and found me on WGN Plus, look through and find Steve's podcast. You don't have to listen to him. Just find him. And and go somewhere else. I'm sure you'll find some. John Cass is around somewhere. Anyway, so no, I wanted to talk to you because you and I, you're the animal expert. I'm an animal nut. And you know, my dogs mean more to me than you know, human people and all that kind of thing. It's summertime. I lost a dog many years ago to a cousin who didn't know better, and we were gone for the weekend, and she took the dog, and she went in a store shopping, and she said she just left the dog in a car for 5 minutes is what she said, but of course he suffered heat stroke, he died, and I'm not over it, and it's many years later, and I thought, we've got to get the word out. People have to understand how to care for pets in the summertime.
You know, with all of the talk and the conversation about leaving dogs in hot cars, or for that matter, infants, about little kids in hot cars, every summer it happens, and this summer is no exception, and there are several stories. The worst is someone who went to a veterinary clinic, no less. She was worried her dogs would be aggressive. It's an odd case. She left on the car, and the air conditioning was on in the car, and it was in the lower 80s. She returned back to the car after checking in at the clinic. I don't know why it took her 30 minutes or more to get back to the car, but it did. By the time she got back to her car, the motor was off. It had shut off, and the dogs, all six were dead.
Oh, my God. You actually wrote about this recently.
Can I be honest
with you? I couldn't read it. That's the problem with these stories. People post them, and I just can't handle even reading them, and people's, I don't know what you'd call that. Obviously, she loved her dog, so you don't want to call it, there's nothing evil about it, and I'm sure she's paying a big price emotionally, but I just don't get what goes on with people. How do you do that?
Well, what I did is, you'd enjoy this one. I had a producer who told me, well, here's a good idea, and I thought, okay, and it turned out to be not a good idea to do, but maybe a good educational idea. So a year ago, I went on the roof of the Anti-Cruelty Society parking garage and wore Robin, my wife's fake fur coat. It was about 80, 82 degrees outside, partially sunny, so it wasn't a hot day.
Yeah.
The window was open a crack, and in no time, the thermometer exceeded 120 degrees. I don't know how high it went because the thermometer only went to 120. The GoPro that we used, and GoPros are sturdy.
Oh, you were cameras. I'm sorry. So you were testing this out. You were kind of being what it's like to be a dog or a pet in the car, experiencing it. Okay, I get it. Go ahead.
Exactly. And the GoPro camera, the sturdy GoPro camera, died. I mean, that's how hot it was. It was probably 130 degrees or so. And that was in about 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes. A person, though, wouldn't wait anywhere near that long and would open the door and leave the car.
Right.
Dogs, of course, don't have that option. Also, dogs do not cool themselves as efficiently as people. So dogs really don't sweat very much. They have no mechanism except panting to release the heat. And that's not very efficient. So nature gave the dogs a very efficient nose. They can smell about 1,000 times better than we can, literally 10,000 times, actually, better than we can. We don't even comprehend all of what they're sensing when they take a sniff of anything, even a blade of grass. They can get the 411 on other dogs who have passed by just from sniffing at a blade of grass. However, when it comes to cooling themselves off, some dogs even have more issues than others, and all dogs, compared to people, are not very efficient. So if you're hot, your dog is hotter. In a car, walking outside, it doesn't matter where it is. Now, if your dog is a dark-colored dog, like has a black or brown coat.
Like my dog, Miles.
What?
Like my dog, Miles.
Yeah,
right.
Because it's like why you, almost instinctively in a way, wear a white T-shirt in the summer to reflect the heat back. You wouldn't wear a black T-shirt. You'd feel warmer. Well, dogs don't have that choice. They're wearing that coat all the time. So dogs with darker colored coats have a more difficult time. The bigger the dog, the more difficult time. So your little miniature schnauzers have it, in general, pretty easy compared to a Labrador retriever and certainly compared to a dog like a Irish wolfhound or a Great Dane. The dogs with the most difficulty are the brachiocephalic breeds. Those are the breeds that look like they walked into a wall. Mm. They kind of have that pushed-in face.
Yeah,
so
like a pug?
Bulldogs would be at the top of the list.
Yeah.
But French bulldogs, some of the pit bull-type dogs.
Are pugs?
Very much so, yeah. Shih Tzus, Pekingese. So
right.
All of these dogs have very difficult time because they're shortened airwaves when it gets very hot outside. And the solution for those dogs is not to go into the water because many of those I just rattled off also cannot swim at all or at least very well. So that's a concern too, actually. We get some dogs that drown in swimming pools. And even, incidentally, dogs like Newfoundlands that can swim forever, well, they can't get out of a pool. They have a problem, and no dog can literally swim forever. So dogs sometimes drown just because there's no human there to supervise. The dog jumps in the pool but doesn't understand how to get out, or there's no easy way out.
Well, that recently
that
happened
as well.
That was a period of weeks ago when there was a car accident on Lakeshore Drive in Chicago, and a dog got out of the car, was in one of the cars, and I think you linked to the video, and certainly we ran it on WGN. The dog jumped in the water. I thought it fell in the water, jumped in the water, and it took, thank goodness, a Chicago police officer was able to get him and rescue him. But the dog jumped in but could not get out.
Yes, exactly. So if the police officer was not there, yeah, it was busy, so another bystander probably would have done so. By the way, I'm not – the police officer was wonderful for doing this.
And deserves a citation, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. It was a great thing. The police officers do great things every day, in my opinion, and don't get enough credit for it. And this was just another great thing that happened to be caught on video. But someone else might have done it. But if no one was there, then this dog, you know, could have actually, as it happened where this dog was, swam, some 100 yards south and gone to Oak Street Beach and just walked up on the beach.
Hmm.
But the dog had no way of knowing that. And the dog would have continued trying and would have exhausted himself or herself and probably drowned if nobody were there. So, yes, this happens all the time with our own swimming pools. The safest thing you could do is a little kiddie pool. And whether it be a big Labrador retriever or an old English bulldog that cannot swim very well, that dog is not going to drown in a half a foot of water in a swimming pool, but can certainly keep cool, and you could always add ice to the pool. So that's one safe way, again, a kiddie pool, to keep the dogs outside. There's nothing wrong with a real swimming pool. It's a great way to cool off. I just want adult supervision to be there. Getting back to the car. So here's the question. You're the lawyer. What do you do when you see a dog locked in a hot car, which is incidentally against the law now in our state in Illinois?
So you're literally walking walking down the path of this interview that I wanted to take you. So the first part of this, to bring that to a close, is you're telling people what not to do. And it sounds like, you know, when in doubt, be with the dog, supervise. You don't just get out of the car and leave the dog. You don't put the dog near the swimming pool and go shopping. You'd always be around the pet. And this could be a cat, it could be other animals. But the point is, with your pets, they need to be supervised. Otherwise, leave them in your air-conditioned home where we know they're safe, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's that
sure.
piece. So the second piece, it's interesting you did bring it up because it was what my next topic, which is I have, and you have, I'm sure, I've been in parking lots, I've been in shopping centers, and I see a dog locked in a car, and I do not leave that dog. And either the windows are up, sometimes the windows are cracked a little bit. And my next step, I call the cops. And this has happened to me, you know, half a dozen times. So sometimes the cop broke the window. Sometimes the cop stays there and they went for the person to come out. We always wait for the person to come out, at which time I let them have it. And you know, it's just stupidity. People don't look at you and just go, I thought that was, they're just stupid. And I remember one time it was a family had a dog. They loved their dog. In fact, the wife was, she was distraught when she realized what she had done. They came out with their kid, with the husband, but they just weren't thinking. The dog just stayed in the car. So my question for you is, number one, what should we do? Which I think is you call the cops. You don't let it go. You wait there. You break the windows if you have to. And if that's breaking the law, well, then I guess I'll break a law. But then I also want to say, you know, you were instrumental in creating something, a city program, which is, you know, hashtag Chicago Proud, right? And you worked with Alderman Ray Lopez to get it out there. And
no.
You know.
A different alderman. Wouldn't be him.
Oh, Kappelman.
Yeah.
Sorry. You know what? I had Kappelman in my head, and I said Lopez. Okay. Well,
that's okay.
I'm sure Ray likes the idea.
I doubt it.
But anyway, okay.
I don't know. I have no idea.
All right. Well, Kappelman liked the idea, and it was Kappelman because you were on the show. Anyway.
Yeah, and other aldermen that I've spoken to do like the idea.
Okay.
Very, very much.
So my question is, given the fact that you have history in that, what do we do? This is an awareness campaign, right? So that's the thing. People aren't mistreating their dogs or locking them up or whatever because they mean to. There are evil people in the world, but that's not what we're talking about. What kind of campaign can we get out there so that people see that hashtag or see this and understand what they should not be doing?
I love that idea. I love the idea of creating a hashtag for that. You know, because there's a hashtag for everything now. I do agree that most people don't, of course, intentionally want to do harm to their pet, who they love very much. They're either running a quick errand. They don't realize how long they're going to be gone. They don't realize how hot the car really gets. I'm not sure that I understand, because I think, Paul, at this point, between awareness that reporters have done, like myself, over a course, in my case, of 20 years, but also large organizations that have more resources than I do, like the Humane Society of the United States, ASPCA, they've had programs to instruct people about simply not leaving dogs in hot cars. It's that simple. Also informing people how quickly the car gets hot. I did that video, which I'm sweating. It looks like I'm going to die any minute, you know, because I'm still in that hot car. I'm not letting myself out after 20 minutes. And we show how hot. We actually show the thermometer, and the thermometer can only go so high, how hot it got, and it's not even that hot outside. We've done the information. I think we've done the education. How we go further, I don't know. But I love the fact that many states now have laws where it is unlawful to have the dog in the hot car. And I do agree with you. First step, actually second step, call the police. Sometimes a car is parked in front of a store, like a convenience store, and there's no other store there. You know that is likely where the person is.
Right.
I say go into that store first, just to save time.
I've done that.
Can come out.
I went and I had people paged. Well, the owner of. I've done that.
Mm-hmm.
Where there was a Walgreens, a Mariano's, and I went in to had both those stores to page somebody, and nobody came out. The person, by the way, ultimately was in one of those stores. I assume they didn't hear the page.
I don't know. Yeah,
but my question is, so you can't.
Then I agree. Call the police.
Yeah.
And if the police don't come out when they say they are going to come out, then at some point, perhaps you do need to take the law into your own hands. But that is a decision that I am not endorsing
right.
Legally, because I cannot do that. It's up to you as an individual to decide what you want to do.
Yeah.
And at that point, the laws vary from state to state.
So maybe we need to ask listeners to maybe send a topic into you. In other words, this isn't going to be hashtag crack the window or you know, leave air through the, because that's not sufficient. So I'm sort of twirling in my mind to say, what is the message we get out there that solves the problem? You know, it's not about leaving the air conditioning on. You've told that story of the woman where the car turned off. So there's got to be some message that can go out there that sends the message, this is not what you do. Maybe it's hashtag leave the dog at home. I don't know.
I was just going to say that. You know, very often, that's right. You know, I mean, listen, we love our pets. We want them to be with us. We're gone all day, so we run errands, and we want to take them with us. And by the way, it's not much better to go inside the local coffee shop or wherever you go to run your errands. Now, if you could bring the dog inside with you, great. I mean, we go and we often run errands in our neighborhood. We bring the dogs with us, but the dogs can go inside. We never, ever tie up dogs outside. In fact, in Chicago, technically, and you might not even know this, although you probably do know it because you know everything, it's actually illegal to do that.
I know that, but now, people still do it. I see it, at coffee shops all the time.
Yeah. And in fact, some stores even have little handle things,
yes,
that you hook leashes on,
right.
So they're, in a sense, even encouraging people to do that. It's not a good idea. For one thing, your dog can be stolen. For another thing, your dog could just get away and run off looking for you in the wrong direction, get hit by a car. Another thing is that you don't know. Another person can go by with a dog, and that dog could hurt your dog. Or your dog could, being stressed out, do something your dog normally wouldn't do, or alleged do something your dog normally wouldn't do, and you're not there, so there's no proof, and the onus is on you then to defend the fact that your dog didn't bite. So rather than put yourself in any of those circumstances, but the thing I'm worried about at this time of year is the sun. It gets that hot outside, and the same thing with dogs in backyards. You know, without shade, without that shelter, it is actually animal abuse, and the dog does need water. If you're going to, which I'm not a fan of, leave your dog outside for any period of time.
I agree with you. Maybe that's it. Hashtag keep Fido cool.
I like it. I don't have a dog named Fido.
No, but you've got Ethel and Hazel, and they're adorable.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Well, you know, the work you do is so very important. And just having this discussion, I'm sure people listening to this, they get riled up. I actually had other topics that I wanted to get in with you.
Sure.
But we don't have time. The problem is it's getting to be wrap time. Well, I've got this clock thing going. And,
it's a podcast. So what do you do when your dog gets skunked?
Well, that doesn't happen for me, but talk about it.
Well, you get skunked periodically, but what about your dog?
That's by you, but the dog, well, I don't know. If it ever happened, I guess I'd give him a bath.
Oh, no, that's not going to do the trick. So, number one, get a clothespin. That's for your nose.
Okay.
Number two, scrub the pooch with a solution of a quart hydrogen peroxide and a half a cup of baking soda and a teaspoon of liquid dish soap. Number three, rinse. Number four, scrub the pet again, this time with a solution of half tomato juice and half water. Number five, rinse. Number six, go to the movies while the odor subsides, because you don't know how bad this is, Paul. I mean, the whole house is going to smell.
Does it happen to your dogs?
Or skip steps 2 through 6 and use Fresh Wave Pet Shampoo. It's a commercial, maybe, but really it's true. I mean, this stuff really does work.
Has it ever happened to your dogs?
No. You know, but living out in the suburbs, where I do not live, it happens every single day. I mean, and we have more skunks than ever before for a variety of reasons. I don't know that that's a bad thing. I think it's a good thing. But not if your dog is on the other end of it.
Well, this is good to know, because actually when you talked about that mixture of tomato juice and water, I thought that was very similar to the wine you last brought to the house last time you came to visit me. It was about that quality, so I certainly haven't opened that bottle, so I'll use that if it ever happens. I have one last topic then before my producer yells at me and says you got to wrap up. One last topic. When I read stories of the guy who drops two poodles off of the fifth floor of a parking garage, or pick your animal torture story, or the woman who wants to get her boyfriend aggravated so she tortures the dog, and of course people send me these videos, they post them, all this kind of stuff. I can't even watch them; it's terrible. But I just, what do we do to get the laws even more tough than they are to just make people pay a price? Because I think if you're abusing animals, you're a step away from abusing people.
Well, first of all, what you say you think is true. I mean, animal abuse and domestic abuse, as well as other sorts of abuse to people, if not far worse, if not actually violent crimes, not that abuse isn't, that's a violent crime too, of course. There's a link. So if someone is shown to abuse animals, I mean, studies have been done over and over and over. And in fact, if you Google this, the term is actually called the link. There is a link between animal abuse and violence from people to other human beings. We now know that. There's no question about it. Studies have, as I said, been done and replicated around the world. So there's no question that that is the case. Now, in Illinois, and these laws are often state by state, in Illinois, I think we do have really good laws. The problem is enforcement of those laws, and the problem is then, even if enforced, what is the judicial system going to say
right.
in our already overfilled jails? And it's a complicated issue, for sure. And yes, I do think that we are doing a better job of paying attention to these things, but at times they're not taken seriously enough. In fact, often they're not. But I don't believe that the problem is actually having the laws on the books. They're there. The problem is, as I said, enforcement, and even when enforced, the judicial system. And the other thing is that who's going to defend the dog in court? So depending on what we're talking about here, there's no one there. There's not another. Four of those dog friends don't come in and say, woof, 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 saying in dog language, this
right.
is a dog.
Right.
You know, so it's a tough call. Now, in Chicago, other thing, we have court watchers that go in through Safe Humane Chicago and speak up for the dog, if you will. Again, we're moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
Are we where we should be? No. And is it a red flag that this, if there is an increased amount of animal abuse out there, and I'm not sure there is or isn't, I don't know, but if there is, I mean, it could be just more attention because of social media, but if there really is, I'm not surprised because we're seeing a more violent society.
Well, yeah, well, I think that's right. And with tensions going on and then people take it out on the helpers, I'm hearing a little barking going on the side. I assume that is Hazel letting her know.
Yeah,
she's
yeah,
around.
She's got her pickle toy. And she's trying to get something, a treat from the toy, and she's talking to the toy, which is something that she has in common with you because you also spend a great deal of time doing just that.
I do. I talk to toys, anything that'll listen to me.
Now, I know
and,
it.
And
if there's a microphone, he goes.
Yeah, well, and it takes one to know one. We're both on that. Hey. Steve Dale, I want to thank you for joining me. And of course, people should be listening to you every Sunday morning at 6:30, just after the news, on Sunday mornings, 6:30 a.m. Or you post those interviews. They can listen to it there if they don't want to wake up that early. And of course, your podcast, which we should check out, and the thousands of books that you have written.
Yes. Well, as you pointed out, you actually have written more books than I have. But I have a blog that I update almost every single day. You don't have any of that. And you can read mine. You wish you had it,
yeah.
At stevedale.tv.
Which is a good place to check you out. Steve Dale, who's been around since the days of Roy Rogers' Horse Trigger, and even old, that's as old an animal as I could think of. but my oldest and dearest friend, thank you. I will talk to you soon, and please come back, because there's always stuff to talk about. This is a topic of passion for both of us. You live it, but I'm passionate
about
it.
Well, you do too, and I appreciate that. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Steve.